Okay, you're here and ready to go deep with us, and today our deep dive takes us right into the world of web accessibility.
Sounds good.
We've got this super detailed lecture PDF as our guide today, and our mission, I guess you could say, is to really try to grasp those core principles of making the web accessible for everyone, understand why it's just so important, and maybe even we'll bump into some like unexpected connections along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is way more than just ticking boxes on a checklist. This is about the fundamental idea of the internet itself, right?
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of, those big ideas like the foundations of the web, let's start with Tim Berners-Lee, the visionary behind the World Wide Web and the head of the W3C. He famously said that the power of the web is in its universality. Access by everyone, regardless of disability, is an essential aspect. And that really, I think, sets the tone for why this topic matters so much.
It does. And the World Wide Web Consortium, the W3C, the organization that Berners-Lee leads, defines web accessibility as the principle that websites, online tools, and web technologies should be designed so that people with disabilities can use them. So this means they should be able to perceive the information, understand it, navigate the site, interact with all the different features, and even contribute their own content.
So can you give me a quick example of that?
So imagine you're trying to read a web page, but the letters are all blurry, or some are even missing, or maybe they're totally jumbled up. Could you understand it?
Probably not.
That gives you a tiny taste of the daily hurdles people with disabilities face on websites that weren't built with accessibility in mind.
That's a really good way to put it. And it makes me think about, human computer interaction,
HCI.
HCI, exactly, and how it all fits together. Like when you think back to the really early days of computers, with things like Engelbart's mouse and the keyboard, these were huge steps in how we interact with machines. And accessibility is so deeply woven into HCI that people with disabilities are often leading the way in adopting and even driving innovation of new technologies as they seek solutions for their specific needs. And so it makes you think about things like speech-to-text software, for example, which was initially developed for accessibility, but now so many people use it all the time.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
And the sheer scale of this is, something we need to talk about. The World Health Organization estimates that about 1.3 billion people globally, that's like 16% of the entire world's population,
Huge.
live with a significant disability. But you know what? Here's something that might hit closer to home for you, the listener. It's not just about this, already large portion of the population. You will very likely experience some kind of disability during your life, even if you don't identify as having one right now.
Absolutely. That's such a crucial perspective because accessibility isn't a niche concern. It's about building a more inclusive digital world that ultimately benefits all of us in the long run.
And I think that global importance is really underscored by something called the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, or CRPD. It's this landmark UN treaty from 2006 that's been signed by a vast majority of countries, including Switzerland in 2014. And it specifically includes accessibility of websites and web applications right alongside things like physical spaces, documents, and other forms of communication.
Yeah, makes sense.
So let's shift gears a bit, and I want to talk about a connection that people might not immediately think of: accessibility and SEO,
Oh, interesting.
search engine optimization. And so we all know that SEO is about making websites more visible in search results on, places like Google, and ultimately, driving more traffic and, for businesses, more business. But what's really interesting is that many of the things that you do to make a website accessible also give your SEO a boost.
Yeah, it's fascinating. There's this natural synergy between the two.
Totally.
For example, using clear and logical headings like an H1 tag for your main title and H2 for subtitles isn't just good practice for someone using a screen reader to understand the page. It also helps search engine crawlers understand your page and index it correctly, and providing descriptive alternative text for images like alt, a woman using a laptop. That way, someone who can't see the image can still understand what it is. And it also gives valuable context to those search engines.
And think about things like keyboard and screen reader support. If you design your website so that people can navigate through it without using a mouse, using what's called semantic HTML, which basically means using HTML tags that clearly define the meaning of your content.
Right.
Like, for example, using a button tag for something that you click on, instead of just making a generic div element look like a button,
Yeah.
then you're not only making it accessible to more people, you're making it easier for search engines to understand your site, too.
Yeah, and that can lead to more engagement overall.
Exactly. So when we talk about web accessibility,
Yeah.
you know, what kinds of disabilities are we really focusing on?
Well, our lecture PDF kind of broadly groups them into four categories.
Correct.
Sight, hearing, cognitive, and fine motor.
Okay.
But it's really important to remember that this isn't an exhaustive list, and we should always be mindful of something called cognitive load,
okay,
which is basically how much mental effort it takes to process information.
Got it. So like with all this audio content that we're throwing at you in this episode, mm-hmm. we have to be mindful of that.
Exactly. And when we talk about sight, it's important to remember that blindness exists on a spectrum.
Yeah.
And it's not just all or nothing, you know.
Right.
Research has shown that on average, people who are blind take about twice as long to complete tasks on the web compared to sighted users.
Wow.
Which really highlights how much inaccessible design creates barriers.
Yeah. And that's where assistive technologies can come in.
They're so important.
Like we're talking about things like screen readers.
Yeah, like TalkBack on Android and VoiceOver for Apple products.
Right.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And, you know, the ability to change font sizes, you know, make them really big, high contrast display options, screen magnification software.
Right.
And there are also some really neat tools out there for enhancing colors. Voice recognition software like Dragon Dictation and even AudioCap PTCHAs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know about that.
Yeah. So instead of having to like decipher those, you know, squiggly letters.
Yeah.
You can listen to, you know, an audio version of that security check.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So then we've got, you know, the hard of hearing. And for them, the primary assistive technologies are things like captions and transcriptions for any audio or video content.
Right.
As well as instant messaging platforms for, you know, real-time communication.
Makes sense.
It is worth noting that a lot of those voice-activated devices that we've all gotten so used to
Yeah.
can be completely inaccessible to people who are deaf or hard of hearing.
Yeah, that's true.
But thankfully, you know, we are seeing some really promising technologies like AI-powered smart glasses
uh-huh.
that can give you real-time visual translations of spoken words.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting.
It is.
And then we come to cognitive disabilities. And this is kind of a broad umbrella term
yes.
that covers things like dyslexia, dyscalculia, autism, ADHD, sensory processing disorder.
Right.
And, you know, issues related to literacy.
Yeah.
And even migraines can be triggered by poorly designed websites.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so what's really interesting about cognitive accessibility is there's this huge array of different tools and techniques out there.
Yeah, there are.
They can provide support. So we're talking about things like accessible fonts that are designed for readability,
right.
screen filters and dimmers to reduce visual strain, content warnings for, you know, maybe sensitive material captions to help with comprehension. Things like Beeline Reader, which uses a color gradient to help guide your eye through text,
okay.
the use of reminders,
right.
and even universal symbols to help convey meaning.
Yeah.
So lastly, we've got fine motor disabilities. And those can involve things like dyspraxia, Parkinson's disease, cerebral palsy, carpal tunnel syndrome,
right.
arthritis, ALS.
And multiple sclerosis.
Yeah. And these conditions can make it difficult for people to use a traditional mouse and keyboard.
Exactly.
So in those situations, assistive technologies become super important
Absolutely.
For enabling interaction. So we see all sorts of input devices like lip, tongue, chin, or finger mice, sip and puff switches.
Oh, wow.
Head-controlled mice, on-screen keyboards,
yeah.
swipe-based keyboards, one-handed keyboards.
Yeah.
External switches that can be activated with any part of the body, and of course, voice control software.
That's amazing.
It is.
So this brings us to this concept of inclusive design methodologies.
Okay.
And this goes beyond making accommodations after something's already been built.
Right.
It's about embedding those accessibility considerations right from the very beginning
yeah.
and designing with, you know, the full range of human diversity in mind.
Absolutely.
So by actually involving and learning from people with diverse perspectives,
including those with disabilities, we can create much better, more user-friendly experiences for everyone.
I completely agree. And to really understand what it's like to navigate the web using assistive technology,
yeah,
our lecture PDF suggests trying something they call the Voice Reader Challenge.
Okay, I like it.
So basically, just take 10 minutes and try to use only a screen reader
okay.
to navigate a website. Maybe try booking a flight on a site like Norwegian.com
okay.
and see what happens. It can be really eye-opening to experience the challenges that people face daily.
I'm sure.
You can usually activate screen readers using keyboard shortcuts like Windows key plus Control plus Enter on Windows.
Okay.
Or Command plus F5 on a Mac.
Got it.
Or by triple-clicking the side or home button on an iPhone.
Okay.
And on Android devices, you can usually press and hold both volume buttons.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So let's move on to some of the exciting advancements in AI and how they're impacting accessibility.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable how fast this field is evolving. And, I mean, it makes you think back, you know, a decade ago, how someone like Stephen Hawking was thinking about the potential of AI even then.
Right.
And what's really transformative about AI is its potential to break down those accessibility barriers in ways that, you know, just a few years ago we couldn't have imagined.
Yeah, for sure.
So take a tool like Be My Eyes, okay, which uses GPT-4o, for example.
Mm-hmm.
This allows people who are visually impaired to use their smartphone camera to get real-time assistance.
Wow.
And the AI can actually understand and describe incredibly detailed visual information.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and we're seeing new tools like UX Agent, which is basically an LLM agent-based usability testing framework.
Okay.
Specifically for web design.
Interesting.
And this kind of AI can really help developers spot potential accessibility issues early on in the design process.
Right.
And looking even further ahead, we're starting to see progress in brain chip technology.
Oh, wow.
Which has the potential to actually translate thoughts into actions.
That's amazing.
For individuals with really significant motor disabilities. And we can't forget about the advancements in real-time voice translation tools.
Right.
Platforms like Replit, which has something like 30 million users.
Yeah.
And supports over 50 languages, demonstrate how quickly accessible ideas can be, you know, prototyped and deployed.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And even tools like Google's Notebook LM are opening up some really interesting possibilities for more personalized and accessible learning experiences.
Wow.
Okay, so I think it's time to talk about web accessibility standards and why they're so crucial.
Okay.
Well, for starters, in a lot of parts of the world, they're the law.
Really?
Yeah, so publicly funded websites and applications like those belonging to government agencies, schools, public services,
right,
they're often required by law to be accessible.
Okay.
But beyond just legal stuff, it's just good practice.
It is.
For any organization that wants to reach as many people as possible.
Absolutely.
You know, think about big online retailers or airline websites.
Yeah.
So it's about making sure that everyone has equal access.
Right.
And while there are various guidelines and standards out there, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, or WCAG,
okay,
are kind of the gold standard.
Yeah.
The internationally recognized gold standard. And knowing WCAG is really essential for anyone who's involved in web development, particularly front-end developers. And it's worth remembering that often when you make something more accessible,
yeah,
you're also making it more usable for everyone.
Right.
So the W3C is the organization behind these global standards.
Okay.
And we've got WCAG 2.0,
okay,
and then we've got the current recommendation, which is WCAG 2.1.
Got it.
The newest version is WCAG 2.2,
right,
and WCAG 3.0 is even on the horizon.
Wow, so much is changing.
It is. It really is. And the core principles of WCAG are summarized by this acronym, POUR.
Okay, POUR.
Yeah, so perceivable, operable, understandable, and robust.
Okay.
And within these guidelines, there are different levels of conformance.
Okay.
ALA and AAA.
Got it.
And level AA is kind of the standard benchmark,
yep,
in lots of places, including the European Union,
okay,
which has actually incorporated those EU directives on accessibility into its national laws.
And there are related guidelines like ATAG, the Authoring Tool Accessibility Guidelines, which, okay, focuses on the software that's used to actually create web content.
Interesting.
Making sure that's accessible. And then there's UAG, the User Agent Accessibility Guidelines.
Got it.
Which focuses on the people who make web browsers and media players.
Right.
And encourages them to build in support for all those accessibility features.
Okay, so what about Switzerland?
Well, Switzerland has its own legal framework that's defined by the BAVIG and BAHIV,
okay,
which requires digital accessibility for public sector entities,
right,
and even some private organizations based on something called the ECH-00059 standard,
okay,
which is essentially Switzerland's version of an accessibility standard.
Got it.
And it aligns with WCAG 2.1 level AA.
Okay.
And there's this really key organization in Switzerland called Access for All. They provide audits, training, and certification for web accessibility.
Interesting.
And their best practices, you know, really emphasize multilingual support, making sure there's full keyboard navigation compatibility with screen readers, and using clear, well-structured language.
It's really interesting to see all these different countries and organizations all kind of working towards the same goal.
It is.
And I think it's also worth mentioning that WCAG-3 is currently in an exploratory development phase.
Mm-hmm.
They just released an updated working draft in December of 2024.
Wow, so this is all very new.
It is very new. And while it's expected to keep similar core accessibility requirements as WCAG-2,
okay,
it's probably going to have a different structure, a revised way of determining conformance, and a broader scope that goes beyond just web content.
Interesting.
So let's go back and unpack those POUR principles of WCAG-2 a little bit more.
Okay, sounds good.
So perceivable means that, all the information and the user interface elements have to be presented in ways that people can perceive them. So this includes things like providing text alternatives for non-text content, like images, captions for videos, making sure that the content can be adapted without losing its meaning or structure, and making it easier to see and hear content, like by providing enough contrast between the foreground and the background.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So then we have operable, which focuses on making sure that all the user interface components and navigation elements work properly.
Okay.
So that means things like making sure everything is accessible using just the keyboard.
Right.
Giving users enough time to read and interact with content.
Uh-huh.
Avoiding any content that could trigger seizures like flashing lights or things like that.
Okay.
Providing clear ways for users to navigate and find what they're looking for.
Right.
And making it possible to use different input methods beyond just a mouse or a keyboard.
Yeah.
So next up we have understandable, which is all about making sure that the content and how the interface works are clear and easy to grasp.
Yeah.
So this means using language that's readable and understandable, making sure that content appears and functions in predictable ways, and providing mechanisms to help users avoid and correct mistakes.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, we have robust.
Okay.
Which means that the content should be developed in a way that can be interpreted reliably by all sorts of different user agents,
right,
including various web browsers and assistive technologies.
Right.
So basically, it's all about maximizing compatibility with all those different tools.
Makes sense.
And as we mentioned before, these guidelines have those three levels of conformance.
Right.
Level A is the bare minimum. Level AA is kind of the mid-range, and that's usually the target for legal compliance.
Okay.
And then level AAA is the highest level of accessibility.
Got it.
Now, it's really important to understand that there's no single automated tool out there that can tell you with 100% certainty whether your website meets all the accessibility standards.
Right.
While tools like the WKKEM report tool, ATAG report tool, and simpler checks like Easy Checks can really help in finding potential issues.
Huh?
A proper manual evaluation by people with disabilities or accessibility experts is always necessary.
It is.
And speaking of those Easy Checks, they're a really fantastic place to start for anyone who wants to get a grasp on web accessibility.
Uh-huh.
So, for example, take image alternative text.
Right.
The goal is to provide a meaningful text description for anyone who can't see the image.
Yeah.
So good alt text is descriptive, like a golden retriever playing fetch in a park.
Okay.
While bad alt text is vague, like just image or picture.
Makes sense.
So then there's the page title, which is the first thing screen readers usually say.
Right.
And it's what shows up in your browser tab.
Uh-huh.
So it's good practice to use a short, clear title like Contact Us, the Deep Dive Podcast.
Okay.
Instead of something generic like home or just website.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And headings are so important for structuring web content.
Yeah.
They should be nested in a logical order, starting with H1 for the main heading, then H2 for subheadings, and so on.
Right.
And this gives screen reader users a really clear outline of the page.
Makes sense.
But if you use headings inconsistently or skip levels, it can be really confusing.
It can.
And then there's color contrast.
Right.
Which is crucial for people with low vision or color blindness.
Yeah.
There needs to be enough contrast between the text and the background colors.
Yeah.
To make sure everything is readable.
Right.
And the good news is there are tons of free tools out there.
Oh, good.
To help you check if your colors meet the WCAG guidelines.
Awesome.
And then we've got skip links, which might not seem like a big deal,
okay,
but they're really helpful for keyboard users.
Okay.
They basically let you bypass all those repetitive navigation menus
right
at the top of a web page and jump right to the main content.
I see.
And it's also essential to have a visible keyboard focus indicator.
Okay.
So when someone's using just their keyboard or voice commands,
right,
this visual cue shows them exactly which interactive element has focus at that moment.
Yeah, that's helpful.
It is. And declaring the language of the web page using HTML is important because it lets screen readers pronounce everything correctly.
Okay.
And making sure that your website is responsive.
Yeah.
And lets people zoom in, you know, usually up to 200%.
Yeah, right.
Without breaking the layout or making content disappear.
Yeah.
Is super important for people with low vision.
It is.
For audio and video content, you always need to provide accurate captions or subtitles.
Right.
For people who are hard of hearing.
Right.
And you also need transcripts.
Yeah.
Which can be simple text versions or more detailed descriptive transcripts. Mm-hmm. These are so important for people who are deafblind and also really helpful for screen reader users.
Yeah.
And then for anything that's purely visual,
right?
You need audio descriptions to provide context by narrating the important visual stuff.
Yeah.
And then finally, when it comes to online forms, using properly coded labels for each form field is super important. These labels are what screen readers announce to tell users what information is needed.
Got it.
And properly associated labels also make the clickable area bigger for things like checkboxes and radio buttons.
Right.
Which is great for anyone who has limited dexterity.
Yeah, that's important.
And as we mentioned before, those automated testing tools like Wavy contrast checkers and even SEO tools like SEMrush and RF can help find accessibility issues.
They can.
But they should never replace a thorough manual test.
Right.
The W3C has a great list of accessibility evaluation tools on their website, which we'll link to in the show notes.
Okay.
And, you know, you might even come across situations where you need to evaluate HTML code based on those WCAG2 easy checks and explain what you find.
Yeah, that's a good example.
Yeah, we put together a list of important W3C reference links for anyone who wants to dig deeper.
Okay.
Along with some color accessibility tools like Topdoll Color Filter, WebAM Contrast Checker, and Color Oracle.
Okay.
And a general accessibility tool called Wavy. So as you keep exploring the ever-changing world of, you know, the internet and the digital landscape, think about this. With all the advancements in artificial intelligence and a growing global understanding of how important inclusive design is,
right,
how will our approaches to web accessibility change in the coming years?
Yeah, that's a great question.
It is. And, you know, we really encourage you to check out all those resources we've provided and think about your own interactions with digital content.
Yeah.
Pay attention to those accessibility features that are already shaping your experience, often in ways you might not even realize.
Absolutely.
This isn't the end. It's really the beginning of your own deeper understanding of this really important aspect of the web.
I agree.
So keep learning, keep exploring.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next time for another deep dive.
See you then.